So this is the 9/11 and other deep state crimes teleconference for the 27th of June. Wow. A lot of background static there. This is the 9/11 and other deep state crimes teleconference for 27 June 2018. Barbara, that's you. I'm going to mute you just a second here. Ken Freeland and Cheryl Curtis facilitating, Craig McKee, secretary. Craig, you want to call the roll?
Yes, sure. Who I have on so far are John O'Malley, Ken Freeland, Marie Spike, Marty Hopper, Mike Springman, Peter Ketchum, Wayne Cossey, Jeff O'Neill. Hold on, that's page one. Or sorry, that's page two. Anna Hendricks, Barbara Honegger, Kat McGuire, Charles Ewing Smith, Cheryl Curtis, Craig McKee, Dan Hennen, David Cole, David Rold, Greg Longo, and I think I got everyone. Did I miss anyone?
Okay, if you didn't hear your name called, please say as much. Anybody who wasn't mentioned by Craig? Well, hearing none, then we'll move forward to our next item on the agenda, which will be approval of the minutes as circulated by Craig and myself in the draft agenda. Any objections to approving the minutes as circulated? Yeah, hearing none, then we'll take the minutes for approved and move on to our next agenda item, which is the approval of tonight's agenda as circulated in the draft agenda. Does anyone have any objections to adopting the draft agenda for our use tonight? Well, hearing none, then we'll just proceed on our draft agenda. And that will mean that our very first item will be Jeff O'Neill. I believe Craig will introduce him.
I believe it's Michael Springman first, is it not?
I beg your pardon. Michael Springman is the first one on the agenda, and that would be introduced by Cheryl. He will be introduced by Cheryl. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Okay. So, everyone, Mike Springman, I think he's well known to most people on the group, but just in case, Mike is a lawyer. He used to work for the State Department in Saudi Arabia and saw how they were giving visas to people that shouldn't have gotten visas to come to the U.S. He's written several books, and he's going to talk to us tonight about a recent trip he made in May to Iran. It was called, I think, the New Horizons Conference. Mike?
Yeah. Shall I start?
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I tell you, this is an amazing study in contrasts. Having been with the illustrious Department of State, maybe I should read you a little bit about what they think about Iran. They have four levels of travel advisory, from exercise normal precautions to level four, do not travel. This is the highest advisory level due to greater likelihood of life-threatening risks. And what they say about Iran is, do not travel to Iran due to the risk of arbitrary arrest and detention of U.S. citizens. There is a very high risk of arrest and detention of U.S. citizens in Iran. Well, I tell you, that's like everything that else comes out of the Department of State is absolute nonsense and totally out of touch with reality. I spent a delightful week in Iran from May 11th to May 18th. And I met the friendliest, happiest, warmest, open people I've ever come across. It wasn't fake friendliness. I saw enough of that in the Department of State. They were friendly to you because of your position. They were friendly to you because you could do something for them. But these were genuinely helpful, marvelous people. And as far as the danger goes, myself and a couple of other people figured the greatest danger was being met by warplanes with Mogadevans on the wings in the air over Iran, or while we were on the ground being bombed by them at the beginning of Ramadan. But I tell you, this New Horizons conference was designed to publicize Palestine and the position of Jerusalem, Al-Quds in Arabic. And the conference had some 50 participants from all over the United States and Europe. From the United States, we had Phil Giraldi, formerly with the Central Intelligence Agency, Michael Maloof, formerly with the Department of State, Scott Bennett, formerly with the Department of the Army as a psychological warfare operator, and Peter Van Buren, formerly with the Department of State. He had been forced out over questions he'd raised in Iraq, just as I had been over questions I had raised in Saudi Arabia. Additionally, there was Greta Berlin, who had traveled to Palestine on relief expeditions that were not attacked by the Israelis. Plus, they had journalists such as Hafsa Qara Mustafa from Britain, who speaks English better than the English, French better than the French, and while I haven't heard her Arabic, I would imagine it's as good as any Arab in the world. We had politicians from Croatia. We had politicians from Germany, a member of the Munich City Council, a couple of members of the European Parliament. There were a number of Frenchmen there. And it was a tremendously international group who gave a great number of interviews to a great number of journalists. I mean, there were some that you went from one interview to another interview. Some were scripted. We traveled outside of Iran to outside of Mashhad, where we started the pilgrimage city, to Ghazvin, a former capital of the country, for a couple of days. And it was tremendous. We would go out for a cup of coffee or to change money, and someone would grab us and say, hey, would you talk to us about subject X? And while we were talking, somebody would come up, and as soon as we were done, they'd say, well, we'd like to do an interview about Palestine, or we'd like to do an interview about the book that you've written, or whatever. And it was an amazing number of interviews. Scott Bennett and I were on national television twice, and people just couldn't get enough of us. We went, and outside of Mashhad, we went to Ghazvin in the northwest. It's maybe 90 miles or so from Tehran, which is in the north center of the country. And we spoke to a representative of the Supreme Leader. We spoke to a member of parliament. We spoke to a well-connected local attorney. And, you know, we were received there with Iranian Coca-Cola, Philadelphia cheesesteaks without the cheese, pizza, and cheeseburgers. So it was an effort to go out of their way to engage in real public diplomacy, not the fake kind the Americans engage in, where they're talking about the CIA manipulating people's attitudes. This was a real effort to get us to know the Iranian people, and for the Iranian people and their representatives to get to know us. We were interviewed by journalists in Ghazvin. We toured a church that had been Russian Orthodox Church years ago. We had excellent food, marvelous food in an old caravanserai, 300 years old. We went to another caravanserai that had been turned into a shopping mall. They had the most marvelous handicrafts there. I mean, I wished I had brought more money with me. I think I would have brought half of Iran back home with me. But the whole operation was the sixth one put together by this fellow, Nada Talebzadeh, who is very personable, speaks English with an American accent because he went to American University here in Washington, D.C., not far from where I live. He went to Randolph-Macon and Columbia University. Wherever we went, if you just stand about looking lost for a minute or two, somebody would come up and say, can we help you? Do you need something? What can I do for you? So it was an astonishingly organized trip, and we saw a lot of people and a lot of things that you normally don't see. Now, granted, as I've been asked by one German journalist when I got back, well, did you see any ordinary people? And I said, no. We were so scripted that we just simply couldn't go out and walk on the street. The timing was far too tight. And there was also the people who were grabbing us for these ambush interviews. So we didn't meet the ordinary guy on the street, who may have not been able to speak English quite as well as some of these other people did. But it was a tremendous, marvelous occasion, and it was astonishing architecture. I really got to talk about in Mashhad. It was a pilgrimage city. They've got the eighth imam of Shiism, the 12th of Shiism, where they have 11 imams and a hidden one that will emerge at the second coming of Jesus Christ, and together they will fight the Antichrist. But this thing comprises something like 146 acres of beautiful domes, minarets, mosques. Am I still here?
I think we lost your moment. Just a moment there.
Oh, okay. I left off saying there's 146 acres of beautiful mosques, minarets, turrets, and fantastic architecture with pointed arches and beautifully inlaid tile and lots of glass and crystal. It was absolutely astonishing. And it was jam-packed with people. I forgot to mention, we had a zillion photographers taking pictures of us. And one of the speakers was the ultra-Orthodox rabbi from New York, Dovid Weiss. He's the guy who's with Netzarei Karta, and he's the man that says Judaism is a religion, not a nationality. And he was there in the round fur hat and the long coat, wearing a stole in the Palestinian black and white colors, with the red, white, green, and colors of the Palestinian flag. So he was a great subject of attention. He gave the most rousing speech that really capitalized on what people really should believe about Israel occupying Palestine. So it was all in all a fantastic week's experience, and I and others, we came back and we said, we can't adjust to life outside of Iran. It was so fantastic. Additionally, while I was there, I met Lauren Booth, who is Tony Blair's sister-in-law. She's a Muslim convert. She's 6 feet tall, and she intimidated the living hell out of a bunch of Israelis when she went to Palestine, and they gave her a hard time. She was simply menaced, this guy, by walking up to him, who was about half her height, and he simply backed down. So it was a fantastic experience. And we're trying to get this thing off the ground and made into a continuous operation. And one of the things I have to do is to start putting up Facebook pages and start contacting the 50 participants to get themselves engaged in this thing. So I'm open to questions if you have any. Otherwise, we can go on to the next guy.
Well, let's. If you'd like to ask a question of Mike Springman, star 6 on your phone should do it for you. And we'll get you in the queue. Star 6 will put you into the queue for Q&A mode. Okay, so Barb, you're first.
Hi, am I on? It's Barb.
Hi. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hi, Michael. Yeah, the first comment I have is I think this is absolutely wonderful citizen diplomacy. That's what, remember the ping pong diplomacy with China before China actually opened up to the West?
Yeah.
The more the better. That's my first comment. I would like people to know that out of the conference, I believe you, Michael, and Kevin Barrett and Scott Bennett, everybody that I know and many of us know who were there, drafted and sent to the Iranian authorities, to the foreign minister, and I believe the prime minister, anyway, two top government authorities in Iran, a letter encouraging the Iranian government, the equivalent of our Department of Justice, to fight the really absurd $6 billion default judgment against Iran for allegedly being part of the 9/11 attack. It's absurd. And it's the third time that Judge Daniels in the federal court for the Southern District of Manhattan, the same court that our Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry recently on April 10th filed our grand jury petition, and both Mike and I are on the board of the Lawyers Committee, same court, same court as Judge Hellerstein, who, you know, is like the judge from Israel. So everybody just needs to know that this letter, you can read the letter on Kevin Barrett's website, truthjihad.com. But the main point I want to make is that the Lawyers Committee responded officially at our last board meeting. It's every 2 weeks, and it was last Wednesday. We voted on to approve an official response to the Iran letter. So what I will do, people can read that for themselves, and I will be sending the Iran letter, the letter to the authorities that Mike and Kevin Barrett and Scott Bennett and other Americans were involved in drafting. I will send that letter and the Lawyers Committee response for posting with a minute. Okay?
Fine.
Yeah, maybe also include a link to that letter if it's posted online, because we may not have space in the minutes for the whole letter, but maybe.
Yes. In fact, the link, okay. Kevin Barrett has, that very good. Kevin Barrett has now added the official Lawyers Committee response to his webpage that also has the letter, and our response is immediately under it. So I'll just give you the link.
That'll work. Thank you, Mark.
Okay, very good.
I think a lot of people would like to see that particular document. Yep.
Yeah, the bottom line, just so people know, is the Lawyers Committee is not able to represent Iran, which was the hope of the Iran letter. We cannot do that.
Yeah, but do they refute any of the arguments in favor of implicating Iran or no?
Well, see, that's the problem. Iran didn't defend itself. It decided not to respond at all, and that's why there was a default judgment of $6 billion, because they didn't even respond.
Yeah, I just meant in the Lawyers Committee response. Do they?
No. The Lawyers Committee response just explains why we're not able to represent any outside party, whether it's a government or an individual. We are able, the Lawyers Committee is able, to pursue our grand jury petition and our grand jury presentation of evidence to a grand jury and friend of the court brief and other actions Mike knows the official names of these, but we're not able to represent third parties.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for that, Barb. Oh, let's see who else has a question or comment here. Kat McGuire. Go ahead, Kat.
Hi, this is Kat, and I trust you can hear me. Okay, great. Mike, are there any forms that have to be filled out? I mean, do you get selected, or can I just say, well, I want to go, and I just pay my way and get my visa? So how does that work? And also, who's ever organizing it, are there like scholarships for people, something like that? So what's the criteria for getting to go, and is there any funding from Iran's end?
In my case, it was all expenses paid by the New Horizon Conference, the organizer of this. But there was paperwork involved, and I think the paperwork pretty much applies for anybody who wants to apply for a visa to Iran. First off, it takes 2 months for an American citizen or a British citizen or a Canadian citizen to get a visa. Other countries, it's 7 to 10 days. In the case of Palestinians, they don't need a visa at all. But the questions, I filled out two sets of forms where they asked for everything from my grandfather's name to have I ever worked for the United States government, and if so, what did I do, and what was my title, and what was my position. So they pushed pretty hard from the Iranian end, from the conference side, to get me onto this thing, because the Iranians waived the $120 visa application fee. But I think anybody who wants to go to Iran can, provided they have a contact there. I think one of the questions they asked was, do you know anybody there? Do you know anybody you've been staying with? And if so, give their names. And I gave the organizer of the conference. It went very, very quickly once this thing was approved and I had to produce a scan of my passport information page and a scan of a visa photograph, and had to wrestle with that, and eventually called in a computer expert to make sure that everything went according to plan, because what I had wasn't acceptable to the Iranian government's website. And I think while I'm on the subject of Iran, I think I left out something important at the beginning, that Iran seems to have a very functioning economy. There were shops, people buying things in the shops. They had motorways with toll booths. They had double-decker commuter trains. And they had a tremendous amount of traffic in Mashhad and Qazvin. It made Washington and Moscow combined look bad, or it looked very easy. It was amazing. I mean, they pulled their way into lines of cars where gas was 25 cents a liter, even though the wage was $300 a week. But everybody let everybody else in eventually, and there was no crumpled fenders. So I'm happy to continue answering questions, and I apologize for having such a disjointed response to your very insightful remarks.
Oh, okay. And last, Carl Golovin. Go ahead, Carl.
Michael, hi, Carl Golovin. Welcome back.
Hi.
It sounds like a fantastic trip.
Oh, I want to stay there. It was fantastic. The food was marvelous. The people were very friendly. And this business of, the Iranians, they keep their women sequestered. Well, they're out in public. They're eating with men. And there were journalists who were women. There were photographers who were women. And they were all around us all the time. So that this nonsense of these Iranians keeping the women under lock and key like the Saudis do, that's absolutely crap.
You mentioned how the economy seemed to be doing just fine, and I wanted to mention in that context or ask, did you discuss sort of at all the nature of their system of banking or credit that Iran uses? Because my understanding is that they may be doing exactly what, for example, Lincoln did when he created the greenback, that rather than using a central bank that conjures credit into existence at usury, simply a government can create money and spend it into the economy or facilitate transactions without having to pay the owners of central banks usury. And I stumbled across a book that's on this topic, and I believe it actually even references Iran as among those countries demonized in history for not going along with the global plan of everyone having a central bank that helps kind of siphon off the wealth of mankind, essentially. The book is A History of Central Banking and the Enslavement of Mankind by author Stephen Goodson, Goodson. He's been labeled, attacked as anti-Semitic, as a Holocaust denier. I don't know about those allegations. He somewhat refutes them, what I've read. But he was actually a director of the South African Reserve Bank. He also points out Libya was doing the exact same thing. They were spending usury-free government state bank-generated credit into the economy and creating just a booming economy, different from the whole Western system.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't say that Iran has a booming economy. It seemed to be functioning. But they do have a central bank. I changed dollars for rials there. And $40 came to probably a couple of million rials. A 100,000 rial note issued by the central bank is worth about $2.40.
Okay, my guess, though, is that when they create those notes to put into circulation, they're not having to do via creating a treasury note that then is held by the central bank at some rate of usury that adds to the expense of putting the credit money into circulation.
Of that I don't know.
It seems to be a crucial issue even in
But he doesn't know the answer to your question, Carl.
Yes.
Thank you for asking. It is an important consideration that I think many of us are keenly aware of. Okay, so let's end this session. And I just want to make sure that let's see, I think it was David Rowley. I had to mute him earlier. Well, maybe not. Maybe he's self-muted. Okay. So, assuming everybody's had a chance to ask, we'll go on to our next agenda item then. And thank you very much, Mike, for your very enthusiastic report about the situation in Iran and the conference there.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's see. Now we're ready for, I believe it's the American Exceptionalism Myth and the Selling of U.S. Domination. This will be spoken to by Jeff O'Neill, and Craig will introduce it. Go ahead, Craig.
Sure. Jeff O'Neill is a Vietnam veteran and former Marine officer who actually lived in Canada for a number of years during his youth before returning to the U.S. in the 1960s in time to serve in Vietnam. And it was during this time that he began to question the justification for the war and for other conflicts and interventions around the world. Recently, Jeff wrote an excellent article, the one that Ken just mentioned, and that was published on my website, Truth and Shadows, and there's actually an abbreviated version of it that's on the website Counterpunch. Jeff made contact originally with Graham McQueen about the article, and this led to Barry Zwicker, and then from Barry to me. The piece looks at the notion of American exceptionalism and how this misguided idea has contributed to the climate that has made several devastating post-9/11 wars possible. And Jeff was also interviewed recently about the article by Andy Steele on his AE 9/11 Truth podcast called 9/11 Freefall. So I'm going to hand it over to Jeff. Jeff, I told Jeff that I would I'd be available to sort of pop in with a question here or there if that would be helpful at any point, although I have I'm pretty confident that he won't need that from me, but just in case I do pop in, I don't want people to think I'm interrupting or anything. So that's it. So I'll hand it over to Jeff, and he'll tell us, he can tell us about his article and how he came to write it, I guess. Are you ready to go? Hold on, is Jeff muted, possibly? Yeah, Jeff's muted. Yes. Okay. Here we go. Jeff?
Yes.
Okay. We had you muted there accidentally, sorry.
Okay.
So we're I just finished the introduction there of you. So
okay,
are you all set to tell everybody about the article?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I feel a little bit out of my element here with you guys because you are all on the front line here trying to bring 9/11 out into the air, and I applaud you for that. I could describe myself as an angry old man that every once in a while just gets fed up with a lot of things and just starts writing down stuff. So I just want to talk a little bit about war because it is basically the worst form of human behavior, and nothing that I know of compares to this, not even close. And yet... In the United States, you would think that war is the best thing going since sliced bread. We seem to be knee-deep in it. A lot of people glamorize it, eulogize it. We got monuments everywhere. You know, the city of Gettysburg is like a cottage industry for the Civil War. I don't understand that. In my own experience, I went over there. I was a little bit older because I'd come back to college and then... from Canada, and I was like 24 years old when I joined the Marine Corps. Here I was an American citizen. My country was at war. I figured, why not? You know, I'm able-bodied, and then you get over there and you find out what the real deal is. All of the guys in the ties and the suitcase and the briefcases that are waging war aren't anywhere to be found. They're just kids over there, And the people in Vietnam didn't do anything to us to deserve what we did to them. I think the President of the United States went before a joint session of Congress and said that we were attacked by a North Vietnamese torpedo boat. And from then on, I think it was like a 40-minute debate in the Congress, and they gave LBJ carte blanche to do what he wants, to do what he wanted. And from then on, we dropped 20 million gallons of Agent Orange in the country, and people are still having birth defects and diseases from that to this day. We burned villages with napalm, and the one my favorite is the Laos thing. We flew almost 600,000 bombing missions in Laos. It's just almost incredible when you stop and think about that. There was like 8 minutes every 8 minutes for 24 hours for like 9 years that we bombed Laos, the most bombed out country in the history of air warfare. So I came back from that and I was pretty scarred because I knew it was a fraud and I had to live with it. But I had a strong family and they supported me. And I was able to, with my college roommate and myself, we opened up a small business and we were successful. And I never voted. I didn't take any interest in what was going on in the country at all. And then 9/11 happened, and my first reaction to that was, I hope we don't overreact to this because it looked like this could be really bad. And when they said they were going to invade Afghanistan, I thought, okay, that's not so bad after all. Well, then in the fall of 2002, Bush started pushing the buttons on the Iraq war to go into Iraq without ever even confronting Osama bin Laden. And that's when I knew it was a fraud. And that's when I started looking into it. And I went down the rabbit hole with 9/11. So I've been having some back issues, and so I was sort of confined to a chair. And I'm not a writer, but I started writing things down because I wanted my family to understand that they don't join the military unless somebody's storming our beaches. And I hope that my great-grandkids or whatever never, ever wear a uniform, like I said, unless somebody's storming Atlantic City. So when you start looking into this, I mean, the Korean War, Curtis LeMay said that they ran out of buildings to bomb, so they started bombing the dikes so that they'd starve people. All those buildings in the whole country were bombed. The Gulf War, we bombed Iraq for 72 days, including their electrical grids, water purification plants, storage treatment centers, and then we imposed a sanction. And then how could they possibly be ready to be a threat to anybody with a no-fly zone in the north and the south? And Colin Powell goes and describes them as being, you know, the next Third Reich or something. I mean, it's just absolutely absurd. So I feel like, well, I know that, you know, Afghanistan is a real fraud because it started the global war on terror. And, you know, there's no evidence to connect the Muslims to this. And then you go from there to Iraq and then to Libya and Syria. I mean, the fact that we've been actually training and funding all these terrorist groups in Syria from the beginning, from the very beginning, and how many millions of people have been displaced and how many millions of people have been killed in the Middle East, I just don't have words. I, to be honest with you, I don't know what the country stands for anymore. Is that good? Am I done? I feel like I'm ranting here. I get kind of hungry. Hello?
I'm sorry.
Jeff, do you want to, Jeff? You didn't mention anything about the American exceptionalism angle. That was a big piece of your article. Why don't you mention that?
Okay. That's just basically hypocrisy. We are allowed to wage war, and the only other country that wages war that doesn't get accused of being barbaric is Israel. You know, we do anything we want. We're in Afghanistan. We're you know And then somebody else does anything, and we're all over it. We're at the UN complaining about anything. And it's like we make our own rules. That's the whole thing. We don't abide by international law, but we expect everybody else to. And if this is what we are, then we should. Then I would be happier if we just said it and said, okay, we're the biggest threat to world peace by far, and just be done with it. But the hypocrisy is what I really can't tolerate.
How do we get away with it, Jeff?
How do we get away with it? Because we've got the guns, and the media is in bed with the Pentagon, and I think I was a little bit with this article that I wrote. I was figuring that people would be saying, if you don't like it, leave, you know. But the comments that I've been getting have been pretty positive, and that's given me a little. I know that there's millions of Americans that are really good, honest people, but they just don't get the reality of what's going on. I mean, the whole Syria thing from the very beginning, we're the ones that have caused all the trouble over there, all the families that have been killed and displaced. I mean, it's just it's beyond the pale. And I go out to watch my grandkids play soccer. And I'm wondering, like, why are we entitled to live in peace here, and they're not entitled to do that anywhere in the Middle East, in places like Libya and Syria and Afghanistan or Iraq or any place like that? Why are we the ones that are entitled to live in peace? I don't get it. You know, I would wish it for everybody, obviously, but we lost what 29-97, something like that, on 9/11. And I was like, it was like Hitler invading Russia or something like that. I mean, we made this huge deal out of it. And I'm not trying to minimize the lives of the people that were killed that day, not a bit. But compared to what we've done post 9/11, it's just off the charts. I don't even have the words. Anyway, I feel like I'm ranting here. And if anybody has any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Okay, so thank you, Jeff. Personally, I'm always refreshed when people bring us back to the anti-war angle, because that was my entree into 9/11 and just about everything else I'm involved in. It's always about the wars and what we can do to stop them. So who would like to ask a question or make a comment? If you would, *6, and I see that Mike Springman is already ready with his own question. So wait a minute. Yeah. We'll start with him, and then anybody else, *6, if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. My question is, I guess, more of a comment than anything else. Wouldn't you agree that this American exceptionalism goes back centuries to 17th century Massachusetts Bay Colony, with Governor Winthrop describing the place as being a city upon a hill to which the eyes of all are looking up to? And it's been reinforced over the years, I think, as people fled repressive governments in Europe and elsewhere, and coming to the New World to make a life for themselves and believing that they've been blessed in doing so. And you sort of had this Calvinist religious idea of, well, you know, your prosperity and your chances of life in the next world are evident depending on how well you do in material things here on Earth. So I think that this has been carefully nurtured. It got a big shove during the war between the states when the religious fanatics in the North ranted and raved about chattel slavery in the South while ignoring wage slavery in the North. They were quite happy to have the next boatload of immigrants coming to work for whatever they could get in the way of hard scrabble wages. Mm-hmm. So I think it continued on from there to, Woodrow Wilson, the Democrats in the 1914 war, saying America's too proud to fight, but we're going to go out and bring an end to wars, to end wars, because we are Americans and we are a democratic state and so forth, whereas everybody else isn't. And it got another push during the Second World War. And during the Cold War, again, it's, you know, America's free, and the evil Soviets, they're poor and miserable and unhappy and so forth. And people believe this. They believe that you know, we can't have socialized medicine where the government pays for medical care for everybody in the country, just like Medicare for all, because we're too exceptional. We have to do everything the American way, which is, you know, self-reliance and struggle and so forth. So that's my view of exceptionalism, and I wondered if you thought anything along those lines.
Well, I don't have the same historical perspective that you have, Mike, but I totally agree with you. But then when you look at our brief history of warfare, I think we've been at peace for like 22 years out of the since 1776, something like that.
Yeah, all you got to do is look at the battle streamers on the Marine Corps colors.
Yeah, no. And it's disgusting. It's just, you know, I don't have words when you see these kind of figures. That when you're doing the research and the number of people that have been displaced, number of people that are killed, and then you hear people say, "Well, 9/11, baby, they deserve it," and it just makes
it's this sanctions business. We are so moral, we're going to impose sanctions. We're not going to fight you. We're going to starve you to death. We're going to prevent you from getting medicine for your children. We're going to make sure that you don't get spare parts for your airplanes, like in Iran. When I was there, we were warned each time we flew, due to American sanctions, you know, we're short of spare parts and the plane might fall out of the air.
Yeah.
And in Iraq, 500,000 children died because of sanctions, and the Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, said, "Well, that's efficient. That's good."
Yeah, I remember that. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people that don't remember it and think she's a marvelous person. The Atlantic Council gave her an award just the other day.
Yeah. Well, there was a lady in the gym, I was reading People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn, and I had never seen this. I had never seen this lady, and she comes up to me and says, "Oh, you're reading Howard Zinn?" I said, "Yeah, it's a really good book." She says, "My husband loves it." And then she started talking about Trump and all this stuff, and I said, "Well, I agree with everything you're saying about Trump, but." I didn't vote. And she says, "You didn't vote?" I said, "No." I said, "Hillary Clinton to me is just as bad." And she said, "Why?" She said, "Why?" I said, "Well, I'll tell you one story." And that was the Julian Assange release of the Hillary TikTok, where she wanted to use Libya as a brag sheet. And I said, she just in that one thing alone, she destroyed probably 20,000 families. And she said to me, "Well, nobody's perfect." Then you just want to crawl into a hole, you know? It's just unbelievable.
Okay, let's give Ann Hendricks an opportunity to make a comment or ask a question. Go ahead, Ann.
Hi. I would just like to know if you could recommend a reliable source for facts on military action we have initiated since 9/11, or period. Where is the best resource to get?
I can't say one particular. I'm not a professional researcher. I'm not a professional writer, and so I was just sort of hem and egging the whole thing, and it took me a long time to write a 5,000-word essay. It took me probably a couple months because I'm just not good at it. And one of the best books on this is by David Ray Griffin called "How Bush and Cheney Ruined the United States and the World," I think. And there's a lot of really good information in there. Finding out who you can trust in the alternate media, and that sometimes can be a challenge. You know, like John Pilger and Julian Assange, obviously, Glenn Greenwald, you know, people like that, where they're just unafraid, A, to tell the truth, and B, to defend the truth, and no matter who they're speaking with. I can't say one source, but that's kind of how I did it.
Sure. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Let's see if I can bring up this. I don't have it. I was going to give you. Oh, yeah, here it is. It's William Bloom. Okay, William Bloom is probably a very good resource if you want a chronological history of U.S. In military involvement throughout history. He's really got a good compilation. If you look up his name or go to williambloom.org,
sure.
B-L-U-M, you'll probably find what you're looking for there, I would suspect.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
That's a good source, too, yeah.
Okay, well, we really want to thank you for that.
We have one more person with a question, Kent?
Oh, we do. Okay, go ahead. Hit them off, Cheryl. I'm not looking at the page. Go ahead.
What do I do? Just click on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Gene, you're all set to ask a question.
Hi, thank you. My name is Gene LaRotonda. Thank you, Mr. O'Neill. My question is about the American Legion. Back in August 2017, passed Resolution 40 about investigating the USS Liberty, and then that's furthering the Veterans of Foreign Wars, aligning themselves with the Veterans of Foreign Wars in 2013 when they passed Resolution 423. Are they, in that aspect, they're knocking American exceptionalism, and I was wondering if you have any familiarity with them kind of having any success in that route.
I thought the American Legion denied the USS Liberty for setting up a booth in their national. Was it the American Legion or was one of the two big ones? I don't belong to any veterans organization, so I'm really not familiar. I am very familiar with USS Liberty, though. I've done an awful lot of research on that particular incident, and every time I even mention it, in fact, I got a USS Liberty sticker in my car. It's the only sticker I've ever had in my car, and not one person has ever, it's been on there for like 4 years, not one person has ever even commented on it. So there are millions of people to this day who have no clue about that. But I don't know anything about it. I get little blips from the USS Liberty veterans, and recently they said that they were denied a booth at the, I think it was the American Legion, but I'm not sure of that. It's one of the two biggest veterans organizations.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. I think that finishes off our Q&A, so we'll leave Q&A mode. And now we want to move on to what everyone has been paying any kind of attention to. It's happened a second time this year, which is that some very important panels that were proposed to the Left Forum were rejected by the usual suspects based on their content. And notwithstanding, a very successful alternative presentation was made in New York. And Cheryl Curtis and Kat McGuire were the two organizers, and they're here to talk about what happened and letting us know where the real left lies these days. So, Cheryl, you want to take it away, and
thank you. So I'm going to give a little bit of an overview about the Left Forum and our history with it very briefly, and then Kat will talk about what we did this year to not be silenced. So and so for those who don't know, the Left Forum is like the biggest left event in the country, and they do it every year in usually early June or late May, and then I noticed last year they had one on the left coast in November. But anyway, in 2015, Kat and I had attended, I think Wayne and David Schlesinger, Wayne Kostian, had done something on 9/11, and the Left Forum allowed it. So the next year in 2016, we decided to do a deep state track with five panels. We had no problem. We rented a table there. We had literature. And we had a really good turnout. And then in 2017, we were planning to do it again, and we rented a table. And I don't think we'd even submitted our panels yet when somebody named Spencer Sunshine sent a letter to the Left Forum saying that we shouldn't be allowed to be on, that we were anti-Semitic, Holocaust deniers, and all that sort of stuff. And so the Left Forum you know, sent us the email. We defended ourselves. But in the end, last year, they wound up canceling all but one of our panels, banning them. And one of them they had approved, and they canceled at the last minute, like 5 days before the forum. And we were told through the grapevine that it was the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation, which funds the Left Forum, that said they wouldn't fund them if they had our panels go on, so or that particular panel. So anyway, we did the Left Out Forum last year, which we rented space in the same building as the Left Forum was going on, but we didn't reveal the location until the morning, Sunday morning, when all our panels were going to be on Sunday. And we had a really great turnout. We publicized it from our table, and we got no response from the Left Forum board when we wrote lots of letters asking them what was going on, why they banned us. They wouldn't refund any of the travel expenses, just total silence. They wouldn't respond to us. So this year we decided to do it again, and because we read their theme for the year, and we thought maybe we had a chance, and this is what part of what their theme says. It says, fragmentation remains an obstacle to our power today, but we don't need to be a rigid consensus in order to build unity together. We can allow for differences and embrace other voices and not squelch them. We don't have to block dissent and critical self-analysis. So they talked about building coalitions and, not squelching any other voices. So we thought, well, we'll try again. So we submitted a panel early on February 15th with Kevin Baird on it, because he was one of the people that they had a problem with. And I had talked to Marcus, the guy who does a lot of the administrative work for the Left Forum. And I said, we were submitting it early because we wanted to make sure if they were going to not approve of them to do it early on. So he wrote me later, and I said, we're spending money on travel, so we need to know. So he sends me an email and says, the panel's going to be okay. You can go ahead and make your travel arrangements, which we did. And then I called him in March 20th, maybe, because we had submitted a second panel and hadn't heard anything about it. And then he told me, these panels won't be allowed, and why would you submit with these same people? And I said, but you already told me to, and we made travel plans. And I said, I'm assuming that you'll reimburse for the travel plans. And he said I could come to New York and try and pick the money out of his pocket. So then Kat and I, could kind of see what was going on. So we continued to submit all the panels, the five panels that we were planning on doing, but we knew they weren't going to approve them, or we were pretty sure they weren't. So we started working on the online conference, and so I'm going to turn it over in a minute to Kat and let her tell you more about that. But first I want to also thank No Lies Radio, because they've videotaped this for all 3 years for us, and Tom Kiley, who did the moderating. They were both a big help in all of this. And then I really want to thank Kat, and truthfully, when it comes to the online conference, she did like 80 to 90% of the work on that, and she's just been an honor to work with and a real real persistent, and she's not going to be silenced. So Kat, I hand it over to you. Kat, are you there? Is she
She's not muted. Kat?
Oh, it was my mute on my end. Sorry. Okay. Thank you, Cheryl, so much. That's really sweet of you to have said. Cheryl just got overloaded because last year it was 50-50, and Cheryl just had more on her plate than she expected, and that's the only reason that she did not equally help me organize. So what we had to do was decide whether we were going to put a stake in the ground. Cheryl and I determined we could not organize two conferences, and so we were pretty certain that they were going to dismiss us, and so we went ahead with the other. But we realized that if we pulled out of the Left Forum, we didn't have a leg to stand on. We maybe probably wouldn't know. We wouldn't know if they were going to ban us, and so we stayed in that till the end, and they not only banned the obvious ones, but we even had one on geoengineering that got banned. So whatever. And so then we just we realized, well, the sky's the limit. We could do whatever we want because nobody has to be there in person. And we just started sending emails out to everybody. And it was kind of disappointing because Cynthia McKinney was one of the first to sign up, and then a day before she dropped out. And so that was pretty disappointing. But we got a really good response, and we opened it up with an extremely strong presentation by Mark Crispin Miller on the silence of the left. He was just excellent. And everyone else on that panel was also very good. And some of them are known to people in this call, like Ray McGovern and Allison Ware. But we kind of had two new faces. One is Jerry Dougherty, who was calling in from Scotland, and he'd written an extraordinary book showing the cover-up of history. And then a wonderful woman named Susie Dawson, she's originally from New Zealand, and she's an exile in Russia. And she spoke very powerfully about Julian Assange, and her talk was called Julian Assange Censored to Death, because they are kind of trying to kill him. And then, surprisingly, the Q&A just went on, and it was just so good. And we were just going to have sort of 30-minute talks, and then whatever's left of the Q&A for 30 minutes. But because there was nothing else going on, we just let it rip, and it was really good. Then the next day, we spread these out over 3 days. We had one on oligarchy, which was interesting. It was good, and it ended up having a really excellent Q&A as well. Tom Kiley did a superb job of bringing some disparate ideas together into a real revelatory Q&A around spirituality. It's confronting patriarchy, resisting full spectrum dominance was the name of the panel, and it really moved into a spiritual place, not religious, but just of a higher calling, so to speak.
Wasn't it confronting oligarchy?
Yes.
Okay. You said patriarchy, but I think you meant oligarchy.
Oh. Okay. Did I? Okay, same difference.
Yep.
All right. I was also surprised at the number of speakers who invoked Satanism and talking about satanic influences, which we're not gotten into. There was no discussion on it, but a lot of them brought that up. It's like, okay. Some of the feedback that we got was some people thought some of this stuff was way out. Well, listen to it, deal with it. And that's why I had such a very strong, don't align with any speaker per se. I can't remember what that's called. I think I have it right here. Disclaimer. Yeah, I had a very strong disclaimer because there were some controversial things. We had a fabulous false flag. I mean, it was just a solid 10. When you've got Barbara Honegger, Michael Springman, Ole Damegaard, and Kevin Barrett, I mean, that one was a slam dunk. And I especially appreciated Barbara for talking about Gladio and basically saying it's here in the U.S., people. So that was an eye-opener for a lot of people. Then Allison Weir's panel got banned as well, and some people are like, well, what happened? How come she was able to speak the year before? The only reason she was able to speak the year before is because she hadn't spoken the year before that, and that's what this Spencer Sunshine had done. He had gone to see who had spoken. That would be 2016, so that in 2017 he knew who to have banned. Well, Allison never spoke at the Left Forum 2016, so she was under the radar, was able to speak 2017, such that by 2018, oh, no, you're banned now. And similarly, Phil Girardi had not spoken before, but he spoke this year, so if he tried to speak next year, they'd probably ban him. So it was like, because our speakers weren't banned the prior year. It's like if you show your face and you're there, you're going to get banned the next year. So long story short, we decided to welcome them to our program at Deep Truth, and they gave a very powerful talk. Allison, of course, is always strong, and she talked about the censorship happening with her. And then she called it a prequel appraisal, my 2001 visit to Gaza. And that was enlightening. And I particularly liked Ziad Shihada, who is a Gazan by birth, and he gave a personal commentary on it. And his wife is quite a good speaker. She needs to be out more, out and about more, perhaps the heir apparent to Allison, I would say. And then we have one on dark technology, geoengineering, 5G, smart meters, and other Faustian bargains. And this is sort of out in left field for some leftists because it's all, you know, everything's political. But this one was really, really important because we were talking, Ilana Freeland gave an excellent intro about our ionized skies, a threat to all life on Earth, and that's what they're doing to us with the chemtrails, the weather modification, the smart meters. This is all really scary stuff that's actually highly political, and most of it is under so many people's radars. So we felt that was a real eye-opener. And then one of my favorite panels was the Zionism panel. Again, an all-star cast. Kevin Barrett, Phil Girardi, Gilad Atzman, Alan Sabrowski, and Jeremy Roth Kushel. It was just really extraordinary. Alan Sabrowski actually talked about Holocaust denial issues and that the Holocaust, the numbers aren't what they said they were. So that was fairly controversial. And Jeremy spoke excellently about Talpiot and Unit 8200, that this is, he didn't say it this way, the subtitle is the Global Cyber Agenda for Kill Switch Domination. So he didn't say it that way, but he was talking about the protocols. So there was a lot of, more than any other panel, what we had, people dropping out, not participating because of the Zionism panel. They just completely backed out, especially people in the technology one who aren't necessarily political, got politicized because of the work they're doing. And actually, it was interesting. The people on the technology panel were really paranoid. They were constantly, some of them, you can't say my last name, and they don't use technology. A lot of them don't even use cell phones. So it was kind of hard to organize, but I also very much got, they're really in the crosshairs. We are kind of politically, and, you know, when they pull their gulag, I'm sure we're on that mainline list, but the people doing work around 5G in particular, they're on real front lines, crosshairs, and all of them felt it's like, are you people paranoid or what? But I don't think so. All of them have felt the jackboot of corporate fascism coming at them, and many of them were scared. And we had several people drop out because they did not want to be associated with Zionism. And one guy dropped out like 1:30 the night before when it dawned on him, for whatever reason he hadn't noticed. And he revealed that most of the activists in 5G are Jewish and that most of the scientists are Jewish, and he didn't want to upset the scientists who are at these conferences for 5G. So that was really interesting, how Zionism was affecting the technology panel. I put out a survey. We haven't had any responses yet, but we just opened up last weekend so that people can watch them for free. So I'm hoping people will fill out the survey so we can get a better idea of what worked, what didn't, for future conferences. Any questions?
Can I just add something here, Kat? I just wanted to tell people that the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation is what funds the Left Forum, and I meant to mention this early, and so I forgot, but they're funded 97% by the German government, and apparently there's 5 foundations in Germany, and they're all attached to one of the political parties, and so the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation is attached to the party called the Left in Germany. And so they fund the Left Forum. Their role is to, you know, supposedly spread democracy around the world. But there is some evidence. There's been an article written about them funding the Nazis in the Ukraine in the last few years. So, you know, they are a suspect organization in my mind. And then also in the John Jay College, one of the board members is a Kroll.
Yeah.
And if you're familiar with Kroll Associates, in connection with 9/11, so you know, we don't know to what extent that affected us or not. But anyway, that just is a little extra piece of information. So, and yeah, if there's any questions.
Yeah. Before let's go into Q&A mode. Before we do, I'd like to ask. Well, let me put it into Q&A mode here. So star 6 if you want to be in the queue to make a comment or ask a question. Before I ask my personal questions, of which I have a couple, I'd like to ask you to clarify. You mentioned, you know, of course, the importance of Truth No Lies Radio, and that's where I listened to the whole thing, you know, breathlessly throughout its course. But can people still access it there? What do they need to do? Can you furnish maybe to Craig a link for people that want to access the content at this late date? Oh, well, I think she's muted. We got to unmute Kat.
I just unmuted her, okay.
Yeah. You can still access it on No Lies Radio. The URL is a little bit difficult. It's got some numbers. But also, if you just go to deeptruth.info, you can have all of the links to the YouTube videos. So
okay.
That's a little easier than, I don't
mm-hmm.
even know off the top of my head what the No Lies Radio, it's noliesradio.org/ and then some number. So,
okay, so deeptruth.info will get people to the content, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good enough. As to my personal questions, follow up on what Cheryl was saying. Has anybody ever explored the funding of the Left Party in Germany?
Not that I know of.
No.
Okay. And secondly, how many people were live in attendance at this event?
You know what? People ask that a lot, and we felt that those numbers really didn't count. They were anywhere, I would say, like 50 to 70, but people go in and out. The numbers that are really going to count are the final YouTube ones that you see, and we expect those numbers will be so much higher. So we weren't even really kind of bothering to count because they weren't weren't realistic. Another thing I want to... Oh, go ahead.
My only reason for asking is just that when this was broadcast, it made it look like there was only a handful of people in the room, and I couldn't believe that was the case. So, you know, 50 to 70 is a lot more than a handful. So I just wonder, you know, if they couldn't make it a point to show a little more participation if it's there to be shown.
Yeah, well, what happened was that was an experiment. The experiment was to have a live audience. Well, what Alan of No Lies Radio really wanted was many live audiences around the country, and they could be tuned in. But he had set up one live audience in Berkeley, which unfortunately was very sparsely attended. And we didn't have any more live audiences, but we probably won't do that again. I did have another comment, if I may make it. When the Left Forum kicked us out last year, it was Kevin Barrett who came up with the wonderful name of Left Out Forum, and that really, really worked. Mm-hmm. And we kind of thought about continuing to use that, but we decided basically no for two reasons. One is... it's in such reaction to the Left Forum. And by the time we realized we were free from those shackles and could get anyone and have any kind of program and we weren't locked in by time or anything, and there were a lot of people who were coming who didn't even know what the Left Forum was. we were sending our invites and stuff far and wide, that we decided to break that cord and not be reacting to the Love Forum. We didn't need to react anymore because we were proactively creating our own event. And the other thing was, is just as much as we like Left Out Forum, you had to have Left Forum and understand that history, because otherwise it sounded kind of you were left out. And we just, we moved into the whole idea of deep truth, and we're just going to create a new identity. And we were sad to leave behind the Left Out Forum, but even though the name was wonderful, the context was no longer as important as calling ourselves deep truth and having a whole new faith and agenda.
Well, before we go to our first comment or question, let me just suggest that maybe you should consider something as broad as the true Left Forum or the real Left Forum, and go ahead and just openly compete. Okay, so our first commenter is Marie Spike. Go ahead, Marie.
Yes, hi. Thanks so much, Cheryl and Kat, for all, you know, the incredible work that you've done, you know, with the Left Forum and the Left Out Forum. I wanted to ask you if you're familiar with Ajamu Baraka and how he was, there was a, Ajamu Baraka, for those of you who don't know, was the vice presidential candidate for the Green Party. He was their nominee with Dr. Jill Stein, and he's also with the Black Alliance for Peace. And at this last Left Forum, and he wrote an article about it, there was an organized protest against him. They accused him of being an Assad sympathizer because he was criticizing U.S. involvement in Syria. So I don't know if you were aware of that, and I just wanted to share that with everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. I did not hear about that until afterwards when I read it in Black Agenda Report. But I'd also like to report another group. Thanks to David Rold, we found out that there was another group whose geoengineering panel likewise got dismissed. And that actually came about on the show, on this conference call a month or two ago. And then the year before, when we got banned, there was another group of feminists who were doing having a panel about transsexualism and how Big Pharma is kind of funding transsexualism to keep them on the sex change pharmaceuticals. And they got banned. I guess it wasn't politically correct to do anything against transsexuals. But we never did connect up with them. So those were some communities that we didn't connect up with that got banned as well. And who knows if there were any others.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And Ken, I think, Ken, it was you who said about, you know, we could be the true Left Forum. I part of where we're coming from is not about left or right. For one, we want to appeal to right, too. But those of us organizing this, we're very much thinking in terms of transpartisanism and not, well, we're the better left, the new left, the correct left. It's not about left or right. We were inclusive of all. So that was another reason we kind of wanted to get away from Left Forum.
I understand, but why present the Left Forum in the first place then?
Why present there anyway? Well, we'll present anywhere where anyone will hear our message.
I got you. Okay. All right. Thank you. Barbara, you're next.
Okay. Thank you. Well, first off, hats off to Kat and Cheryl. I mean, you did it again. You knocked it out of the ballpark. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an honor to participate in the as the 9/11 speaker. I really appreciate the opportunity. I hope that everybody does watch all of these panels. You can watch it also at No Lies Radio. It would be www.nolizeradio/deeptruth. And they're free. I don't know if I can't remember if Kat mentioned that, but there's no longer a need for a donation after about the 23rd of June. So everything is free. And they should just be, the video archives should just be posted both on the Deep Truth conference website and also on the No Lies Radio /Deep Truth web link. So that's number one. Number two, I do want people to know, even though it was completely separate from the Deep Truth online live stream conference, that the Left Forum did accept a panel that was proposed by Les Jamison, one of the leaders, if not the leader, of 9/11 Truth New York City, of course. And that was a panel on the petition, the grand jury petition filed by the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, on the board of which both Mike Springman and I are on. And the speakers at that was officially accepted, and also No Lies Radio did live stream that as well, thanks to Alan Reese. The speakers there were Mick Harrison and Dave Meischwinkel. Julio Gomez was hoping to be able to participate, but his schedule for his legal practice didn't allow him at the last minute. And Les Jamison was the moderator. So if you went to the Left Forum's official website or to nolightsradio.org, you should be able to also see the video of the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry official panel at the Left Forum. So that's number two. And finally, I just want to, I know that Cheryl at the beginning of the call was, we'd spoken before our call today. Cheryl, you were going to add an agenda item and forgot to do that. So I'd just like to know when we can talk about the upcoming 9/11 events in New York City for the anniversary. I don't know if that comes now or not. And my final comment is, I just want everybody to know that you need to watch all of the panels. They were spectacular, each for their own reason. But the last one on Zionism, be sure and watch the Alan Sabrowski presentation. And you should watch all of them. But in particular, Alan Sabrowski, with all of his phenomenal credibility and military background, he actually said in words, all these years that I have been focusing on 9/11 on the World Trade Center, I was wrong. I made a huge mistake. I should have been focusing on the Pentagon. And, of course, many of us on this call already know that. So we have somebody on our side now. And he's a very important person, Alan Sabrowski. So that's the end of my comment. And I'd like to know when we can talk about the upcoming anniversary briefly.
I'm hoping maybe, Ken, can we add that into the announcement section and let Barbara just talk
about
that?
Yeah, why don't we put that first on the announcements and we can have a discussion
Thank
there,
you.
Okay, Bob?
Right,
okay.
Thanks.
Okay, and finally, Barton Bruce.
Hi, it's Barton. Every time in the last day or two when I've gone to just plain No Lies Radio, no WW, nothing else, .org, I've been getting a page with the Deep Truth thing and a click here to watch. Now, there may be a click here or something because I had paid, but it's been letting me in, I think, from pretty much every place I've tried it. It's free. It's right there. You don't have to do anything, any weird other URLs, although it, again, might be because this computer's or other computers of mine are all recognized by cookies or something as being okay. But the other thing is, Hamook has made a couple of 58-minute things. He's edited and shuffled things around so they fit nicely for your local cable station. And he wanted me to put some up on mine, which I will, where I've got a 911 TV, you know, standard channel that's up there regularly, weekly. And but Hamook also got in a rather nasty car accident where he's hurting, but he's okay. He's with family. So out there in California. So. But he's been editing. He's fine enough, so he's been editing his stuff. But I think he's doing chiropractor stuff and things. So say a quick prayer for his speedy recovery.
Who is that?
He will probably have on 9/11 TV, or he might have already gotten there and I haven't looked. He sent me, you know, special links so I could get it on my local cable station, and he wanted to see how they went. But other people who can put things up on cable stations, he will doubtlessly have a lot more tailored to the sizes that makes them happy, not these ragged utter sizes which leave them a lot of dead air because they want a nice multiple of half an hour minus maybe 2 minutes so that they can fit it into their standard programming slots.
Who are you referring to again, Bruce Barton?
Well, it's Barton Bruce. I'm sorry, what did you, is that what you asked?
No, who were you referring to?
Hamook. It's spelled Hummux, but it's Hamook. He's the, you know, Lawrence Livermore National Lab Star Wars Weapon System Scientist and a lot of other things amongst us. He also instrumented underground nuclear tests. He's a physics PhD who knows a lot of the other. But he's 911TV.org and has been for, he and one other person started years ago. But the other guy dropped away years ago.
Hmm.
He's got hundreds of videos up there. YouTube took a whole lot down in the last couple of years, and he just keeps pushing them back up, and they stay for a while.
Would you care to? Would you care to
supply? There's several videos up there that I was his second camera for over quite a few years, including the 2 year one, the 2 day one at the Pentagon City that Barbara had many roles on.
Yeah. Would you care to supply a link for that we could include in the minutes?
911TV.org or it's 911TV.blogspot.com will get you to his stuff.
Okay, thank you.
And he also has all his stuff on pegmedia.org, where you have to get yourself an account, but it's free. And that's especially for cable stations to download.
Hmm.
For the free local town, the public education government channels, so-called PEG channels, FCC empowering citizen journalists in every town in the country that wants to get their act together and have such a thing in there. It's good stuff. I mean, it's not as heavily used as it should be, but it's good.
Yep.
He's got all kinds of stuff. It isn't just 9/11, but all kinds of activist stuff there. So.
Oh, all right. Thank you, Barton.
Okay.
And can I just like to make one final comment? And that's that this is Cheryl. No Lies Radio has, 3 years in a row. And if anyone is looking for some way to donate to, I really want to recommend that you donate to No Lies Radio because they made it all possible to put it out there for everyone to see.
They're our voice in the wilderness. There's no doubt about it. Okay, let's move on then to our announcement section. If you'd like, let's just maybe we'll go back into Q&A mode here. Okay, so if you have a announcement, just star 6 it, and we'll put you in the queue, and then you can make your announcement, or if you want to have a larger discussion, we can take it off of Q&A mode and let everybody participate. So, Barbara, I know you're first, so go ahead.
Hi, are we in, this is Barb, are we in announcements now?
Yep.
Okay, am I on? Oh, okay. I didn't know we were in announcements yet. Okay. All right. So I just want people to be thinking about what can happen, what the big event would be for the upcoming 9/11 anniversary, which are almost always these events in New York City. There's been one exception. I think 2014 was in Washington, D.C., or actually Arlington, Virginia, near the Pentagon. But they're almost always in New York City. I will be traveling to New York City for about a week beginning tomorrow, so I'll actually be there for the first day on Friday through most of Tuesday, and we'll be meeting with Les Jamison and the people who put on these events there. So we're looking for brainstorm ideas. So anybody who has an idea, in this 5 or 10 minute segment, please throw them out when I'm done, and or call me. I can give my cell phone number and be sure and leave a voicemail if you have an idea. We're just going to be brainstorming this. I can tell you some of the ideas that have already been thrown out. If anybody saw the press event, it's on YouTube for the grand jury petition filing, which was on April 10th. There was this outdoor press event on the steps of New York City Hall. And the fourth speaker at that, there were, of course, the two attorneys from the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry who filed the petition, and then Bob McElvain, who lost his son Bobby at World Trade Center 1, spoke. And the fourth person to speak was Dusty Burke, who is with the Westview News, which is one of the two local village newspapers in Manhattan, and so in Lower Manhattan, where the World Trade Center towers were. And so they published in their, I believe it was their, yeah, their June 1st edition, they published an op-ed by the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry that was mostly written by Julio Gomez, but all of us on the board had an input and approved the content. Dusty Burke is really this passionate 9/11 truth activist. And she has an idea. She is actually the outright owner. It's a small miracle the way this happened, but she's actually the outright owner of what are called the 9/11 tiles, T-I-L-E-S. And these were messages that were put on the Cyclone Friend, if you recall, by people who just posted messages and good wishes on and appended them, attached them somehow to the Cyclone Fence, and there were thousands of them. They've been called the 9/11 tiles. I think tiles have been, they've been framed in some way. And she's the outright owner of these, and she has just purchased a very large bus that is in really good shape, that actually it was given to her by somebody who believes in the cause, and that's going to be going around New York City with, and she's going to turn it into a 9/11 tiles museum, a mobile museum. So that's happening. Another idea is to have what is called a mobile video truck, which has two huge screens on either side, like a tent on the right and the left, and you can rent that for 4 hours or 8 hours. The idea is to rent it on the 10th and or the 11th. And so we're looking for video content for that. If you get that to me, your suggestion, because we've got a lot of time to fill. You have to remember that they have to be short, because if we do that, the video truck will be moving and people won't have very much time to see it. So you can actually have still screens with information on it, photographs with a caption. It has to be something that can be seen very quickly. Almost like bumper sticker, okay? Or a very, very short video clip in case the video truck is stopped in traffic or something like that. But it's two huge screens, and I will send a photograph of it for the minute so that you can see what it is and have some ideas to where the content would be if we can raise the funds for that. And then there's discussion of having an event in New York City. We'll be looking at different venues, and probably on the theme of 9/11 truth, 9/11 justice, with the focus on the petition, where we have been on the grand jury petition, where we are as of just approaching September 11th of this year. And not for public consumption, but I've been authorized to let everybody know that the Lawyers Committee originally planned or guesstimated that we would be giving the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York at most 3 months to either say no officially or do nothing before we would file a mandamus to force his hand, to force him to give the grand jury petition and our evidence package to a special criminal grand jury in the Southern District of New York federal court. We haven't heard anything from them yet, but we've decided that it makes more sense to file the mandamus for this September 11th anniversary coming up. It's better publicity. It's a better media peg. So that's the plan. And if we don't hear from them, we don't expect to, we will be filing that mandamus and announcing it around the anniversary coming up. And that if we do hold a major event in New York City with the lawyers group, that would be the focus, the filing of the mandamus to try to get some real publicity, and we'd hold press events and that kind of thing. So that's the thinking now, and the only other announcement is I did send to the group, I think it was yesterday, we just finally got, Richard Gage and I finally got the most important video of our joint European speaking tour, and that was the event in the Netherlands, which was in Utrecht.
And anybody who hasn't seen that, it is a real blockbuster video. The very first almost hour, you can skip. I gave everybody the times in to where Richard's presentation starts and my presentation starts and where the panel discussion starts, which has some real substance. So you can go straight to those parts. It was an incredible event. It was standing room only in the whole lower part of the largest auditorium in Utrecht, the Netherlands, in Holland. It was a huge auditorium. We had a standing ovation, and it was a great, great event. So you can see that for yourself. So those are my announcements. Thank you.
Okay. If you'd like to hitchhike on Barbara's request here for brainstorming on ideas for 9/11 anniversary events, you can *6, or if you have an independent announcement as well. So now we'll go to Jean.
And also, I should say, email me. It's probably better than to call. If you have an idea or an idea for substance for the video truck, you can email me with or without an attachment or attachment. And my email is bshonegg@gmail.com.
Okay. All right. So now we go to Jean LaRotunda. Go ahead, Jean LaRotunda.
Jean, you're not muted. There's some little...
Yeah, I muted myself. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry about that. The idea that I had, I put it on Facebook as a group. There's 186 people interested in it. Is a nonviolent World Trade Center 7 silent sit-in. I had some correspondence in the group. Some of you may know Dave Schlesinger well. He said that it absolutely could not happen without some nonviolence training because of provocateurs or whatnot. So I've tried to get him to participate in the group. He wants to have a conference call with people who are serious about it. He brought up a name, and pardon me, I was born in 72, so this is a little ahead of me. A gentleman named Gene Sharp, he wrote that book, From Dictatorship to Democracy. I guess there's a movie out called How to Start a Revolution, where he was his book and movie were used to create landmark revolutions in other countries. Some of you may know a lot more about this than I do, but again, I just thought it would be a great time now that we have this lawyers committee for 9/11 inquiry petition in. September 11th, everything Barbara just said, and I might be a little naive in trying to think that we might get some of the top three nonprofits to participate in something like that, but I'm going to start talking to each of those organizations individually. That's all.
Okay. Thank you, Gene. Ann Hendricks. Ann, you're up.
Oh, just the question to Barbara, where is the video available for the Netherlands event?
She's muted. Just a second. Okay.
Oh, hi. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, as I mentioned, the video, the link to the video I sent, if you're on the list for this conference call, you received it. It should have been sent to you last night. If you didn't get it, email me, and my email is bshonegg@gmail.com. I'm glad I'm unmuted because I forgot to say one thing. On the European Truth Action Project tap call yesterday, Richard Gage was on with, some 35 members from Europe and the UK, from England, Scotland, Ireland. And they came up with the following kind of meme, theme, or slogan to at least think about seriously for organizing around the upcoming anniversary. And what they came up with was 9/11 truth, : don't be the last to know.
Oh, I like that. Wow.
I like it, too. It's very provocative. It grabs your attention. So anyway, you don't have to use it, but I just thought I'd throw that out, okay?
Right. And just by way of explanation here, what Barbara means when she says she sent it to the movement or to the group here is we have a listserv that's available to anybody who's ever been on this call, and you need to only request a subscription and you'll be added as long as you attend the conference call every now and then, at least to maintain your active membership, and you then will be able to access these intramural kinds of, or these intercall kinds of conversations. So just email me if you wish to be added to our listserv, okay?
So if someone wasn't on it when I sent that last night, the link to the Utrecht video, how would they get it then?
They would get it by writing you.
By writing me.
Your email address, yeah.
Oh, okay. So anybody who who wasn't on the listserv for this call as of last night or early this morning, California time, you can email me and request the link, and that's bhoneggg@gmail.com, and put in the subject line request for Utrecht, or just request for Netherlands video, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
And lastly, David, go ahead, David.
I just wanted to respond to one thing that Jean LaRotonda said. Is I'm not criticizing the idea to have a nonviolent protest, but some of us know that Gene Sharp was a very infamous guy who worked with the CIA, like plotting color revolutions all around the world. And he died last year, but I wouldn't want to work with his foundation or like anybody involved in imperialist counter-revolutions.
If I could, David, I mean, I'd like to comment on your comment because I think it's a controversial question whether Gene Sharp actively worked with the CIA or whether his work was utilized and promoted by the CIA for their own purposes. So I would encourage
you. It's not controversial to me. I live in Boston where his Einstein Institute is based, and like people from his organization like give talks around here like supporting like the overthrows of governments that the U.S. wants to overthrow. And
Was Gene Sharp doing that himself?
I think so, yes.
Do you have any proof of that you could send me that I would like to see?
I will try to find some and send it to you.
I would be very grateful. That would be very clarifying if it were true. Yeah, I would have a hard time believing it because I'm an old fan of his from eons ago. But if that were the case, I'd really like to know about it.
There's some documentation that he was working to overthrow the government in Venezuela. You know, so I'll look for it. So you're Craig?
I'm Ken. Ken.
You're Ken.
That
okay.
would be DiogenesQuest, DiogenesQuest@gmail.com.
Okay.
Thank you very much,
Dave. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Ken?
Yeah.
This is Cheryl. I wanted to just add a comment about upcoming stuff in 9/11. I think, Barbara, if you can put on the truck that you're going to have, that mobile truck, little short videos of, like, famous people so that it will catch people's eye and they'll recognize them, like Ed Asner or Daniel Sunjata or maybe Woody Harrelson, if they're willing. I think that would be a way to really get people's attention.
Yep.
Okay, can I be heard still or not?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Please make our job easy for us. So anybody who has any one of those short clips, and you find it on YouTube, or even if it's a part of a YouTube, if you can send it to me, please, and make the subject line for the video truck, and then give me the link. And if it's a longer YouTube and you're considering a part of that YouTube, give me the time in and the end of the time in.
Fair enough. Okay. All right. Are there any other announcements? Star 6, if you have an announcement or a comment.
Wanted to talk about next month's call, if we have a minute for that.
Yep. Go ahead, Cheryl. That's totally appropriate.
So we have so far Tony Hall talking about his experiences with the B'nai B'rith, et cetera. And then we have Mick Harrison talking about the deep state. And then, I don't know, Craig, are you going to be presenting next month? Craig is muted. Let me unmute him. Craig?
Sorry, I was muted there. Yeah, I wasn't really prepared to have to answer that question definitively this second.
Oh, okay. Okay, so if you
I mean, yes, that was my plan, but yes.
Okay. If you do, then we're really full for July, so we're looking at August if anybody has any suggestions for speakers.
So. Yeah. Cheryl, this is Wayne.
Yes.
Did you say that Mick Harrison from the Lawyers Committee is going to be talking about the deep state?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. So that's all I have on it.
Any other suggestions or some places we might be looking for timely speakers, contributors? Well, hearing none, then I guess we have some things lined up for our July call, and we should be okay, and we can talk a little about our August call. So if you have any ideas, of course, always forward them to Cheryl and myself, and we'll go from there, Cheryl in particular. We want to thank you all for your participation and cooperation tonight. And we look forward to seeing you the last Wednesday of July for our next 9/11 and other Deep State Crime Talk conference. Have a good month, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.